Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here. And from
the Elm Street Group at Morgan Stanley, working with clients to create enduring financial value and a lasting impact through sustainable investing solutions. A local wealth management team with global insights. Find out more at the Elm Street Group at morganstanley.com.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire is getting its groove back. That's how one leading economist responded to recent numbers showing the Granite State had the best GDP growth rate in New England last year. And it's nice to hear those words after many years of slow growth and a lot of angst about why we weren't rebounding more quickly after the recession. But what's the data backing up that feeling, and how widely is this sentiment shared? Today in The Exchange, it's our New Hampshire Economic Roundup, and we ask our econ guys what they think. And let's hear from you. What's happening in your own community or your own life that makes you think, yes, our economy's doing well, or no, it really isn't? Add your voice to our conversation, the exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. And our guests are Jeff Feingold, editor at New Hampshire Business Review. Jeff, always good to see you. Thanks for being
here.
Great
to be here, Laura.
Also with us, Steve Norton, Executive Director of the New Hampshire Center for Public Policy Studies. Steve, welcome back.
Well, thanks so much.
And also with us, Russ Tebow, President and Founder of Applied Economic Research. And Russ, welcome.
Great to be here, Laura.
Well, and that was your quote, Russ. New Hampshire's got its groove back. I love that. What makes you feel that way?
Well, the Bureau of Economic Analysis just released last week its figures on GDP growth from 2015 to 2016 by state. GDP is really the size of the economic pie. It includes the value of all goods and services produced within the economy. And New Hampshire's growth rate was 3% in real terms, meaning after you factored out inflation. And it really made us tied with two other states, Georgia and Florida, for the fastest growth east of, get this, the Rocky Mountains.
Not east of the Mississippi. That's how they usually measure it.
Historically, that's what the yardstick we used. And it really surprised me in a sense that we've been on the show, you know, for a couple of years. We've been doing these pieces. And it's always been, mantra has been that New Hampshire's growth is slowing down. Well, in fact, this says that we've got our groove back. And I don't think it's a one-time thing, because if you look at the yearly growth rate over the last 4 years, it's been increasing, increasing, increasing until this past release where we really, really, really showed some great numbers. So it's very good.
Well, and Jeff, you spend a lot of your time talking to New Hampshire businesses. Are they feeling groovy?
For the most part, yeah, they are. They actually, it's been a long time now. It's been since 08, we had that, you know, the Great Recession, and New Hampshire took a long time getting out of it, which I think is what we've been talking about for the last couple of years, was how slowly New Hampshire is getting out of it, emerging from it, which is actually one of the interesting things about these numbers, that New Hampshire has by far the fastest growing economy in New England. The second fastest is Massachusetts, which is a 2% growth as opposed to 3% for New Hampshire. So that's kind of like a blast from the past, isn't it, Russ?
It is, right.
You know, and that's you know, obviously good. And I think you can see this in a lot of different industries, in manufacturing, tech's doing well, real estate, construction, financial services is doing very well. And, you know, I think the only concern that which is still overriding, besides the usual like energy and stuff, is this workforce.
Which, yeah, and we've talked a lot about
which
that.
Which is really,
program.
Is a major concern that could be a real anchor eventually. It's not. It's you know, this is great news, but for the longer term, it's really it's a concern that businesses have and are, you know, it's not going away anytime soon either.
Steve, I'd love your observations on this as well.
So GDP is one measure of growth, you know, and that's how much we're producing. Job growth is not quite as good. We're, you know, top five in terms of GDP, but we're 15th in terms of job growth over that same time period. So we're not Joe and Grobs, but we're growing jobs as fast as some of these other places. Which I find a little bit concerning, Because if you look at job growth and how we've seen increases, our sort of peak growth year to year was a few months ago, and we seem to be now slightly declining. And who knows why that is? It's hard to predict, but really great news. But, I'm not quite as optimistic as Russ and Jeff that we aren't maybe at the absolute high point for the economy right now.
Well, could that job growth be slowing down, Steve, because there just aren't enough workers? So why create more jobs when there's nobody to fill them?
Right. I was in a panel at the Greater Keene Chamber yesterday, and they were talking about some businesses there were talking about the fact that they were now outsourcing activities because they couldn't hire for them. So they're sending the job to Maine or Massachusetts or other places. And that seems to be happening across the board. They're just not a labor force.
Wow, that's really interesting. And a little bit later in the program, we're going to talk about, the sharing economy, the gig economy, the freelance economy. So that kind of ties into what you're talking about, Steve. So we'll definitely pick up on that. But a little bit more on GDP. So, Russ, what does GDP exactly measure? I mean, you said it measures the value of goods and services, but just give us a little more Econ 101 on that.
It really looks at things like job growth, income growth, business activity, and estimates the size of the economy. And it is an estimate. At one point, I had an intern, and she asked me, well, how do they figure that out? And I thought, I really don't know.
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's a very good question. So they'll look at tax returns. They'll look at income data, they'll look at job growth. You have the consumer a population survey that surveys individuals about their activity, their economic activity. So it's really a composite index, the broadest measure of the economy. It's an estimate, but it's an estimate that does have a lot of credibility.
What doesn't it show?
Well, interestingly, you may have heard that the country of Bhutan rejected measuring gross domestic product and instead measured gross domestic happiness, or tried to. So you can have a good economy with a lot of frustration. For example, it may be that our income is growing because people have two jobs instead of one. That would spawn positive GDP contribution, but probably a negative happiness contribution. You could have an economy that has good GDP growth, but lousy health care. So I think that it is an economic measure, and you can't push it much further than that. There's certainly correlation between a good economy and happiness, but it's not the whole picture.
Yeah, it does basically show you in numbers, whether your economy is growing or not. And certainly, that's how they decide whether we're in a recession, is if we have negative growth for a certain number of quarters. And, the interesting thing is that, we've seen this past year in the U.S. Basic economic GDP was the growth was 1.9, I think, for last year. And a lot of economists say, well, that's not good enough. Because that's really not, it's not the kind of growth you really need for an economy to keep growing. So actually, so when you see 3%, that's when you say, oh my God, this is great. So it is just a number, but it is something that people keep track of because it's such a big picture of what's going on.
Well, and the comparative number that Russ gave is interesting too, sort of comparing how we fit in New England and the rest of the country. Go ahead, Steve.
Right. And it's also interesting to see where we're growing within that GDP, because they do break it out by, major industries.
And, well, I wanted to ask you guys about that. Yeah, so go ahead.
So 2015 to 2016, single largest source of growth in the GDP was in finance and insurance. Second was healthcare and social assistance. And third was professional, scientific, and technical services. Now, those are broad categories. We did a little work trying to figure out what really drove that big increase in finance and insurance. And part of the explanation must be that we have, 80 to 90,000 newly insured individuals in New Hampshire that are creating insurance products and the selling of insurance products that didn't exist before. So part of that growth has to do with, the changing insurance markets in New Hampshire. Beyond that, difficult to say. Certainly there have been some legislative changes which make financial services maybe more interesting to do in New Hampshire, some of the trust law that's changed. And of course, the healthcare and social assistance is self-explanatory. We're seeing that across the country as a primary source of growth in economies.
So that's interesting, Steve. So under the Affordable Care Act, Medicaid expansion in here in New Hampshire.
45,000 people who have insurance that's now through the private market. 45,000 people through the individual market, the health insurance exchanges. Now, some of those people might have had other insurance before, so maybe it's not a complete count, but that's certainly a big increase. We saw the second largest decrease in the uninsurance rate in the country over this time period. So big impact here in New Hampshire likely has some power to explain these numbers.
What else, Russ, is inside this GDP that interests you?
Well, one of the things, going back to Steve's point that I was thinking of on the way down, is that it came as somewhat of a surprise to me. And I mean, I work these economic numbers all the time, and I scratch my head and say, why am I surprised? And I think part of the reason is that during the downturn, we lost around 35 or 40,000 jobs between 2007 and 2010 or 11. But since the trough, we've added 60,000. So half of the job growth was just catch-up to where we had been. So we're showing good growth during this period, but part of it is just making up for the losses that we sustained in the prior 3 or 4 years here in New Hampshire. But I think that's true across the country, too. It doesn't feel really like we're going bonkers in terms of growth and prosperity, but in fact, these numbers say we're doing really well.
Yeah, well, that's a good point that Russ is making, is because, you know, that recession was really a disaster for New Hampshire in particular. It was, you know, we didn't suffer the worst of all the states, but certainly for New Hampshire historically, this was as bad as any that we'd seen since certainly the early 90s, but even, you know, maybe even the Depression itself. And it's taken so long to get back.
That was the other thing. It took a long time.
It took a long time, and I think that created a kind of mindset. You know, we're talking about the happiness factor. That created a mindset for years of people saying, oh, boy, we're just not going anywhere. We're just not going anywhere. And people knew about people with 2 jobs, 3 jobs, and, you know, and not working full time, and all these things. That it really has created a mindset that you can't measure. But I think people still have lingering doubts about the economy right now, which, when it wasn't true, you know, 25 years ago.
Well, we're reaching historic levels of confidence, consumer confidence. The BIA just put out its survey showing that businesses, you know, believe that at almost, you know, levels that were in the 90s, you know, levels of confidence, which I think is irrational exuberance. But
but also, really, when you think about it, that's businesses, not you know, not just people you see on the street, which is what I think, which is what I'm trying to talk about.
Well, let's get our man and woman on the street into our conversation. You can join us 1-800-892-6477. Feeling confident about the economy or not? Give us a call 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. One more time, that number, 1-800-892-6477. It's our New Hampshire Economic News Roundup today in the Exchange. We're looking at some new GDP numbers that look very good for the Granite State. A little later, we'll look at the so-called gig economy or the freelance economy, whether that's expanding here in New Hampshire, and also some new research and new thinking around the role of older workers in the New Hampshire economy. So let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. So, Jeff, one more question on what you just mentioned, underemployment. You know, people were employed, yes, but they were working part-time instead of full-time, or they had 2 jobs, or the job wasn't great, the pay wasn't great, the benefits weren't great. What's the status of this underemployment right now in New Hampshire? Not unemployment. We know that's low, but underemployment.
Well, I still think that that's lingering. It's not because the economy basically just changed during the last recession. We lost a lot of jobs, a lot of sectors. They just aren't the same anymore. And we've had automation and other factors that have eliminated jobs that people once had that maybe were a little bit better paying. So there is this factor where there are still many people in the state who have to work 2 jobs, who are working jobs that in industries where they weren't exactly they had better jobs before, like in technology or manufacturing, and they've had to find it in services, which aren't necessarily the best paying jobs. So that's a factor we have in this in these numbers, is that we see that that's the growth is in a lot of the industries that are lower paying. And that's you know, that's another concern. That's in terms of wage growth and in terms of building up this workforce.
Well, last time we talked 5 or 6 weeks ago, you all did say that wages were finally starting to go up.
They are finally starting to go up. To get to your point about the people that are working part-time. But
underemployment, yeah.
Underemployment, but would rather be working full-time. That segment of underemployment has dropped during this recovery. It had been, by some measures, almost 5% of the labor force was working part-time but would rather be working full-time. Now it's down to around 2.5%. So that's improved. Overall, this big, broad measure of unemployment in the state last year averaged around 6%, including, you know, people that are marginally attached. In other words, they don't really have a full-time job. The people that are working part-time but would rather be working full-time. And that's compared to an overall average of 2.8. So the standard measure of unemployment, 2.8, you include these other sort of marginal factors of underperformance, it gets to 6.4%, which is lower than the country, but
30% lower than the rest of the country.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I mean, most economists will say now that anyone who wants a job can get a job, who can actually get to work, doesn't have, you know, disability or something else that makes it difficult for them to work. But, you know, the other part of this is that this recovery, we've talked about this before, is not uniform across the state of New Hampshire. And when you look at the cities compared to our rural areas, it's pretty clear that they have not recovered and that many of those areas are still in recession. When you look at Carroll County and Coos County, they actually are still experiencing reductions in the number of jobs. So big increase in Rockingham County, big increases in Hillsborough, but the rest of the state not doing quite as well.
Well, and line up for us, Steve, or anybody, this conversation about underemployment still exists, and yet there are the folks that you met with in Keene, Steve, who say, you know, we just have to outsource some of this stuff because we can't find people. Is that a skills gap? What is that?
Well, it's who's in the pool that is still without a job. Folks may be struggling with mental health issues. They might have difficulty with getting transportation. They might not have the right educational attainment levels for the jobs that are out there. There could be lots of different explanations. You know, you hear about these manufacturing firms that they are literally going into the high schools and asking their students to come work right out of high school. They'll train them to be, you know, a machinist, to operate a machine. So, you know, that's a skills gap. Obviously.
Yeah, along that line, you know, I do know I've talked to different businesses where one of the skills they're looking for is someone who can be a welder, which is a basic thing, and there's a real shortage of welders. And there's a program. One of the companies in Keene is trained. It has a public offering, basically a course in welding. They're hoping that some of the people work for them, but they just want to be able to train people to be welders. There's no other source for it. And I mean, this is a perfect example where, you know, because if there might be jobs open. But if it's for a welder, you have to know how to weld.
Sure.
You can't just say, I want to take your job as a welder.
Well, and there's all sorts of holes in New Hampshire's healthcare workforce, desperately needing social workers, mental health professionals, substance abuse counselors. And just like the welder, you know, Russ, you can't just, you know, jump in from working in some service job to being a social worker. You need some time to train.
Yeah, I think what's maybe happened going up maybe 20,000 feet and looking down is that the skill sets needed for this economy have changed faster than the skill sets of the labor force. So the labor force is still not welders, but we need welders. Almost any manufacturing process today requires a technological at least some technological skills, and not every high school graduate has those. And so I think basically the skill sets needed have changed much faster than the labor force has adapted to it.
Well, go ahead, Jeff, real quick.
One other thing that, you know, we're talking about this, like it's specific only in New Hampshire, but really it's a national concern. It's all across the country in terms of just the growth of the U.S. economy going forward.
Well, and certainly our neighbors are dealing with it as well. And this relates to something that you guys have been covering, Jeff, how employers maybe could make better use of older workers,
yes.
Older people, and helping them fit into some of these roles. So we'll talk about that coming up. Stay with us. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
Thank you. Hi, my name is Arielle. I'm calling from Derry.
My name is Elise. I'm from Alaska.
My name is Ina, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the streets of New York City, NHPR's Civics 101 is your guide to how American democracy works.
I had a question about term limits.
How does the Electoral College work?
Can you help me explain the National Security Council to my students?
Subscribe to the podcast and submit your questions at civics101podcast.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our New Hampshire Economic News Roundup. 1-800-892-6477 is the number for you to join us. We've been looking at some very positive GDP numbers and talking about the optimism among New Hampshire employers. What's your economic outlook? Are you feeling optimistic about New Hampshire's economy or a little less optimistic? We'd love to hear from you, your stories, your own personal experiences. 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Also, in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about the aging workforce and how New Hampshire employers might make better use of older workers in our economy. But first, guys, here's an email from Rob in Newmarket, who says, while I feel confident in our economy today, it has an eerily familiarity toward the economy circa 2004-2006. Rob says, I fear harder times are ahead. So Steve Norton, 2004-2006, and then things crashed in late 2007.
That's
so
right.
Go ahead. I wonder what you think.
So I guess people are looking at the stock market right now and its incredible growth since November as a potential bubble that could burst. We saw the stock market retract a little bit, and people, I think, were fearing, is it going to drop again 5%, something like that, in the same way that we saw the housing and the mortgage situation blow up financial services and cause the Great Recession. So there's some discussion about that. There's also concerns that we're at the end of the business cycle. We've had a growth period since 2008, so almost 10 years. That's generally how long these periods last, even though some people would say it doesn't feel like we've grown a lot. So, and we're starting to see some slowdown in the growth in jobs, all of which make you a little conservative, or me conservative, in thinking about what the next, not next year or the year after, but maybe that we're coming to some sort of height point and we're going to see a slight decline going
okay.
forward.
Well, Rob, there you go. Thank you for the email. Did you want to jump in, Russ?
Kind of looks like it's too good to be true. Everything is right. How long can this last? Unemployment is low. As Steve said, consumer confidence is high. Inflation is low. Interest rates are low. Growth is pretty good. It's really an unusual time when all of the major economic indicators are in the green zone. And not even in the yellow zone for the most part. So you kind of do kind of hang on to your seat and keep a close watch on things. As Steve said, the stock market has had quite a run over the midterm and since November. The Fed is saying we really want to raise interest rates, which could have a dampening effect. So I agree that there's concern about the future. But there always is. The business cycle isn't dead. And so we're in a good spot now, but hang on to your seat.
Do you want to jump on?
Yeah, I just want to say that one of the differences between now and 2004-06 is that, you know, we don't have this – we have a pretty hot real estate market, but it's nothing like that. And we don't – and there's – fortunately, there's not this disaster called subprime lending going on. And it's a little bit more controlled than that. But I do agree with what he's saying is that, you know, you can't – there is a little ominous. It seems like there's some clouds on the horizon. But, you know, we're talking about 04, 06 going into 07. 07 was a horrible economic disaster. And it doesn't seem like those kind of factors are at play this time.
Again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. Or send us an email like Rob did, exchange@nhpr.org. Guys, Carolyn is calling from Warren. Hi, Carolyn. Go ahead. You're on the air. Thanks
Good
for being
morning.
With us.
Thank you for taking my call. I taught for 30 years, not in New Hampshire, in Rhode Island, but back in 2000 and prior to 2000, we were preparing youngsters for exactly what you speak of today, the trades, good hands-on jobs, and they were job-ready when they left high school. In fact, voc ed programs were recruiting in the middle schools to get students to take an interest in those paths to a future. However, when No Child Left Behind came through, and everyone, 100%, were expected to be college-ready, all the funding was sucked right out of vocational training and went into the testing programs and pushing kids to be places that they didn't want to be.
Well, Carolyn, thank you for the call. This is something we've talked a lot about on this program, so I really appreciate it. I remember the VOTEC program at Keene High School, and some kids did that, and some kids did the other program, and it was fine.
Yeah. I think people across the state, as part of this concern about the workforce, now are directing lots and lots of energy to just exactly how we're going to meet the jobs in every industry. So maybe we focused a little bit on STEM jobs as a state. Now we're focusing on STEAM jobs. Now we're focusing on HVAC jobs and welders. And so there's a recognition that we have shortcomings in every single labor market right now.
Can you really blame No Child Left Behind, though? Again, I know you guys aren't education analysts. It seems to me to be a trend that has been happening for a while.
Well, I think, I think that's true. I think that people felt like the manufacturing industry was going to, there was going to be a demise out there, and so that there were going to be no jobs. And so people changed the trajectory of where they were suggesting kids go and the resources that we're devoting to these different types of programs. So, yeah, I think this is a trend that's going on for 10 or 15 years.
Yeah, I think part of it is that in the last decade, in the decade of the 2000s in New Hampshire, we lost 60,000 manufacturing jobs. So how much money are you going to put into educating kids to go into manufacturing jobs? Now, actually, we're showing positive manufacturing growth. It's been stable for a while. Last year, we were adding manufacturing jobs. The wages in manufacturing jobs have been driven up. So it's gotten so we've kind of gone full circle on that issue. So.
Yeah, it's a super interesting point, Carolyn. Thank you for calling. Go ahead,
Jeff.
I just
wanted to say that, I think that really, I wouldn't say it was No Child Left Behind, but I do think there's this kind of a mindset that happened in our schools that where they do have this sense that kids need to be basically tracking towards going to college. You know, we have many schools, you take the SAT no matter who you are. And that's like, but if you're not college ready or even think you want to go to college, there are other programs, and I don't know if the schools are as capable or as eager to track kids who don't want to go to college, who could become a welder or an automotive technician, which is, I wrote a story not too long ago about a serious shortage in automotive technicians. Jobs like that where you don't need to go to college, but you can make a really good living and have a good lifelong career. And this is, and I don't think that this is the kind of stuff that's being focused on in schools necessarily.
Well, I want to turn to another part of this workforce problem that we've been talking about. We've talked on this program many, many times about New Hampshire being one of the nation's oldest states, a distinction that we share with Vermont and Maine, by the way. So let's talk about older people in the workforce. The Union Leader recently did a great story on this, including these numbers, guys, that one out of every five new hires in New Hampshire in 2015, this is the last year data was available, one out of every five new hires was 65 years or older. What do you make of that, Russ?
I think that it fits with the data. I was really shocked. If you look at the age bracket, age 65 to 74, okay, those are retirees.
Or 30, used to be retirees. Based on this data, maybe not.
Well, this is the point. 30% of them are still in the labor force.
That's a lot of people.
One out of three people aged 65 to 74. And almost 10% of the people over age 75 are still in the workforce. And I think part of it is they need to be. Part of it is they want to be. They may not be full-time jobs. So I think it's a combination that. And then you add the third factor that employers need people, period. So I think it's really surprised me, though, that 30% of age 65 to 74 is still in the labor force.
Well, you guys have done a lot of coverage of this, Jeff.
Yeah, actually, there was a summit earlier this month focusing on this need in northern New England, Maine, New Hampshire, and Vermont, which are three of the oldest states in the country. And it's really out of necessity that businesses are finding older workers and also being urged to look at older workers, even if it requires some kind of training. You know, some accommodations need to be made and all that stuff, but, you know, it's been shown time and again, you make accommodations for older people, it helps everybody across the board at the workplace. But it's something that has been bubbling up for a long time in New Hampshire, because as we get older and as businesses need employees, where are you going to find? The only other way we can do it is by encouraging more immigration into the state. you know, foreign
and better
immigration,
training for
and
our
better
young
training
people,
for our young
which
people.
A lot of people are working
but,
on.
But that's but if a person if there's a person there who has basically maybe has the skills, maybe has a little lost a little bit on his fastball or something, but is still fully capable of working at a place, why wouldn't you hire that person?
And has the, you know, the experience of showing up every day and,
absolutely,
you know, sort of those soft skills of just being responsible,
exactly,
and so forth.
Exactly.
Well, the other dimension to it is not only are nearly a third of the 65 to 74-year-olds still in the labor force, but if you look at population growth over the decade coming, all of the state's, yep, population growth on a net basis is over age 65. So I think we're going to be more dependent on people that were in what had been the retirement age to keep hanging in there.
Okay, I have a bunch more questions on this for you guys. But I also want to invite our listeners, especially as we talk about this topic. So if you're an older worker over 65, are you working because you need to, because you want to? Are you working part-time, full-time? What's your story, and what's it like for you to be in the workforce over age 65? Again, you can join us. We'd love to add your voice into our conversation at 1-800-892-6477. 1-800-892-NHPR. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Steve, you have done a ton of work looking at New Hampshire demographics, so put that in the context of this workforce issue, please.
So if you look over the population projections done by the Office of Employment, Office of Energy and Planning, they're projecting 7-8% reduction in the working age population defined as 20 to 64 over the next 25 years. So when you hear people saying the labor market is tight now, look out to the future, that's generally what they're referring to, that working age population potentially declining. The only place that, as Russ pointed out, where we're going to see growth is the population over the age of 65. And, you know, just based on those projections, from 2010 to 2040, that group is going to increase by almost 40,000 people. So there's a pool of resources. If you can figure out a way to create environments in which they like to work, are willing to work, and is financially helpful to them. And I think that will be the challenge. You know, I was talking with my father about this, and he noted that he doesn't really want to do any heavy lifting. But when he looks at all the jobs out there, they're largely retail, healthcare, and he's not going to go back to school to get a coding degree. So there's going to be a real question of training and fit for these workers in the economy, I think, that we need to pay a lot of attention to.
I've met a couple folks just recently over 65 who are going back to school to get their substance abuse counseling, yes, training. So that's an interesting field that some people seem to be going into. But picking up on what Steve said, Jeff, okay, so he talked about how companies need to recognize this potential. What do older workers want in the workforce, and are employers giving it to them?
Well, I think like their younger counterparts, need more flexibility as they get older. They have other different kind of obligations and concerns. But for the most part, I don't think it's anything different than other employees would want. And I think the problem has been really that it's out of this great need for employees that businesses are starting to realize, oh, wow, we got this whole gigantic labor pool out here with skills that we might need, that we could use. Why don't we go for them? But there had been this, I guess the only other way to say it would be prejudice about someone who was over 65. Well, they're too old to work. I remember writing stories about 10 years ago about people who couldn't find a job because they got laid off during the recession, and they couldn't find another job because, oh, they're too old, they're in their 50s. But now I think the whole mindset has changed among employers in New Hampshire because they realize that, you know, there's people, just because you're in your 50s, which I passed that already, you know, you're still capable of holding a job and being very productive. And I think that really we're out of necessity now that a lot of employers are starting to realize this. And I think the other thing is that there's still a lagging number of them who just don't realize that at this point.
But they don't realize.
But I think the more understanding they have of this issue, the more they'll realize that there is this pool out here.
Go ahead, Russ. Yeah.
In one sense, at least, older workers are cheaper, less expensive because they have Medicare.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Over 65, absolutely. So you don't have health care.
65, 66. So you don't have the health care expense. And maybe that's part of it. And maybe they're not as fussy about wages. Just get me out of the house a couple of days a week. I can't stand watching daytime television anymore. You know, give me something to do. And I'll be less expensive.
Well, let's take some calls, gentlemen. Again, the number for you to join us, 1-800-892-6477. And Lucy's joining us from Hill. Hi, Lucy. Go ahead. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi. I just have a comment to make about older workers. I own Hill Design, and we, at our height, employed 64 full-time workers. And what we found was we actively would favor older workers, middle-aged to older women in particular, because they had raised a family already. They knew how to prioritize. They knew how to multitask. And they were more reliable.
And what does Hill Design do, Lucy, real quick?
Well, I have retired, and we were a design and manufacturing company specializing in the tabletop trade, particularly gift gourmet. We made ceramic cookie molds, brown bag cookie molds, and shortbread pans.
Wow.
And
so did you have to train people a lot or just a little, Lucy, to sort of figure out, you know, your
work? No, we didn't have
work.
To train people all that much because mm-hmm. we were doing the distribution. We didn't, we couldn't afford to manufacture ceramic products in New Hampshire. The technology, the energy costs were way too high, and it made a lot more sense for us to hire, okay. you know, like independent potteries within the United States.
Well, Lucy, super interesting story, and thank you for calling in. Anybody want to jump in on that? Go ahead, Russ.
Well, I think on today's front page of the Union Leader, there's a profile of a guy that was a bagger at Market Basket, and he passed away. And he was 96 years old and still going to work. So I think that you know, it speaks to the fact that there can be a lot of life left in somebody that's 70 years old.
Actually, at the summit they held earlier this month, a representative from L.L. Bean was there and said that they had workers who were as old as 93 working for L.L. Bean. And, you know, you could produce that. You know, I certainly, you know. Picasso.
That's right.
Well, here's an email that came in from someone who didn't want to give their name in Concord, who says, yes, please cover the elephant in the room, ageism. My friends and I have the technical skills. They are right there in our resumes. We are employed, but trying to get better paying jobs here in New Hampshire without working in Massachusetts, where the jobs are more plentiful and the wages are double. This person says, I feel that the hiring millennials do not want older workers because we may not fit into their culture. Perhaps we are overqualified. This person says, why is 40 to 50 the new 65? We're trying to figure out a strategy. Thanks to this person, there's a lot in this email. And maybe we'll pick up on the idea that this person says maybe we're not getting hired because, Steve, the younger people don't feel we fit into their culture, to quote them.
Yeah, hard to tell. Culture is so dependent on the firm itself. You know, my guess is that Hypotherm has already been thinking about how they're going to deal with creating a culture that's accepting of both older people and younger people. So I think it's hard to generalize. I think the millennials have still not come into their economic prime. They're still not a huge part of middle management. They're not the ones making decisions yet. So that might be a problem coming down the road, but probably not yet.
But well, there are anti-discrimination laws, though, that are at play in this. If anyone sees this kind of, you know, outright discrimination, that's not good.
All right. We will talk more in just a moment. Take a lot more of your calls. The exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Respond on Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. So coming up a little bit more on utilizing the older workforce in the Granite State. And then we'll turn to the so-called gig economy or the freelance economy and how that's expanding in the Granite State. All that's coming up. Stay with us.
Hi, Hi, my name is Arielle. I'm calling from Derry.
My name is Elise. I'm from Alaska.
My name is Ina, and I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York.
From the Alaskan wilderness to the streets of New York City, NHPR's Civics 101 is your guide to how American democracy works.
I had a question about term limits.
How does the Electoral College work?
Can you help me explain the National Security Council to my students?
Subscribe to the podcast and submit your questions at civics101podcast.org.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's our New Hampshire Economic News Roundup, and we've been looking at a couple trends in New Hampshire's economy, including some very good GDP numbers for the state, showing our GDP growth among the fastest in the nation. We've also been looking at workforce constraints here in New Hampshire, employers saying they can't find the right people to fill all the jobs they have, and whether employers are looking closely enough at older workers, bringing people 65 plus into the workforce. Again, the number for you to join us on this topic is 1-800-892-6477. And guys, we hit a nerve here. Lots of people want to jump in, so that's fantastic. Will is calling from Boscawen. Hi, Will. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah. So I've been working for my father for about 4 years now as a metal fabricator. And we talk about this a lot. A lot of people in my generation simply don't want to do this kind of work. There's not a huge pat on the back at the end of the day. Millennials, we like to, feel like we get that, like somebody is taking notice of what we're doing. And I know it's too, like, back 10, 15 years ago, the nursing industry got really big, and you don't really see that, TV commercials and stuff like that really pushing for these kind of jobs.
So you're a welder, Will, which is great that you called in because we were talking earlier about a shortage of welders. And it sounds like you're a young welder, just getting into the profession, right?
Yep. 35 years old. I've actually kind of scaled back to be a stay-at-home dad. My dad had the opportunity, he learned how to weld in high school.
Yeah.
And by the time I was in high school, that opportunity was there.
That opportunity was not there. And we talked about high schools getting rid of these programs and so forth. I just wonder how you and your dad feel about that, how, there's less emphasis on this kind of training these days.
Well, we talk about a lot, and one of the problems is that a lot of old-timers, there's a lot of people who are 50, 60s who are getting out of this, and it's hard work.
Mm-hmm.
I get cut and burned, and, I have minor injuries here and there every day.
Wow.
Who wants that?
Would you say to somebody, who was maybe interested but kind of is hearing you going, yeah, who wants that?
People spend, hundreds of thousands of dollars or tens of thousands of dollars on college education, and they get out and they still can't get a job. If you go to a trade school for a year or two, you've got work right out the door. And good pay, anywhere between $20 to $30 an hour.
Wow, okay.
Guaranteed employment, pretty much. You'd be hard-pressed to be a decent welder and not be able to find a job.
Well, Will, it's really nice to hear from you, given, again, that we were talking about this topic before. So thank you so much for calling. Anybody want to jump in on that? It's really interesting to hear from Will, since we were just talking about the difficulty finding welders.
The Pew Center on the States does a lot of assessment of millennial perspectives, and I was struck by the possibility that the innate interests of the millennials will be different, and they will want job satisfaction in a fundamentally different way than the jobs are going to allow. And how are we going to adapt both the millennials to this market and also the market to the millennials' interests?
Well, let's take another call. Again, Will, thank you for that one. Gail's in Meriden. Hi, Gail. You're on The Exchange. Thanks for being with us.
Hi. Thanks, Laura. So my comment is, after listening to so many of these shows about the job force in New Hampshire, I go back to public transportation for young people, and I think we don't connect our cities. We don't connect our cities to Boston. We don't connect affordable housing towns with our cities where there might be jobs. And so it's no surprise that young people don't stay here. They go places where they have more flexibility and are not going to be stuck in traffic or have to own a car, et cetera.
Gail, thank you so much for calling. Steve?
I guess it depends on what you mean by young. I think that's a great point. You can certainly see that where you open up lines of transportation, say on the seacoast, North Dover, and down the turnpike, you see 30-year-olds moving there. And so they don't want to live in the city. They can't afford to live in the city, but they can get back and forth to this place for a job. So the issue of transportation is obviously critically important. I think if you listen to Senator Morris right now, he believes that I-93, the expansion of I-93 to four lanes, is going to open up another era of incredible economic development. So, you know, making transportation easier back and forth between the Boston metropolitan market, making transportation easier up along the seacoast, clearly has an impact.
But she also, Gail also mentioned affordable housing, and that's a major factor in this, in keeping younger people in the state. I mean, I don't want to make it sound like we don't want to hire older people in the state. You know,
we want
to
everybody.
But in terms of attracting younger people and having them be able to live near where work is available. I mean, there's a lot of affordable housing in Coos County, but unfortunately, the jobs are just disappearing there. There's not affordable housing south of Concord, for the most part, and that's really a major issue, and it's not something that's going to be taken care of overnight either.
Let's take a call from David in Glen. Hi, David. Thanks for being on the Exchange. Go ahead.
Yeah. Hi. I'm David, and I'm 73 years old. At 61, I lost my job. My company was bought out by another plastic molder. And I went to a trade show and became associated with manufacturers overseas and started importing business because of all my connections. And I have built it up to quite a degree now. And I'll tell you what, the reason that it's so great is because the cost of things as you get older seem like they're way out of proportion from your thinking. You go out to dinner, it's $80 just to have a nice meal, where in my mindset, it's about $40. So I continue to work and enjoy all the benefits of an easy job and the freedom that I have with it.
Well, David, that's great. And, you know, Russ, we talked about a lot of people losing their jobs in the recession. And we often heard stories from listeners, especially, you know, men in their 50s and 60s, who said, where am I going to get a job now? You know, I'm 50 years old. I'm 60 years old. I always worked in this one particular manufacturing plant. Here's David. He's coming out okay. Good for you, David.
Yeah, I think, David, that's a great story. I think, unfortunately, it doesn't apply to everybody that loses a job when they're 61. A lot of the people that lose jobs at 61 end up working in the food service business, maybe lodging accommodations. So I think it's great, and it shows that there are opportunities essentially at any age.
Here's an email that came in from Diane in Manchester. As an older person working, it seems to me that millennials today are opting for more prestigious jobs that bring them status and money. Our culture and the education system seem to have encouraged that by looking down on more trade-oriented jobs, thereby diminishing the amount of opportunity for those who want to pursue that type of education. So, Jeff, that's what we've talked about for the last 10 minutes, really, sort of the status of those more working trades that Will and Boscawen talked about.
Many years ago, I wrote an article in New Hampshire Magazine, actually, about the people who you don't think about who work, who you need desperately. And, like, when your furnace goes out, you need someone to fix your furnace. When you have a burst pipe, you're going to need a plumber.
Well, and plumbers, that's another aging workforce, actually.
Yes, actually. And even like something hard, like let's say your septic system overflows. You need someone who can work, who can clean your septic system out. And these are jobs that maybe people look down on, but when you don't look down on them when you need them. And that's something that, you know, it would be, Diane makes a good point about this, because I do think people do have this kind of a snob factor in many cases. But in reality, we rely on these people much more than we think we do.
Well, in some of Jeff's publications reporting, New Hampshire Business Review, people said, and I'm quoting, most employers don't have a strategy for engaging and retaining older workers. What do you think, Russ? Is that a fair critique or not?
Yeah, I think it kind of is, but I think it varies greatly by industry. In the healthcare industry, that's not true. There's a great deal of flexibility afforded to, senior-aged nurses, LNAs, et cetera. I think in the construction industry, it's the opposite. There is definitely a bias towards younger people, maybe for practical reasons.
Well, it's very physical.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. All right. Did you want to jump in, Steve?
No. Manufacturing, they've been dealing with this for 10 years. They've looked out. They see the average age of their floors at 47, 48. They know they have to deal with this. They've been trying to figure out ways, either building in-training facilities or sites or figuring out how to make schedules more flexible.
Well, that's true of construction. That's true of automotive. It's a whole across a whole spectrum of industries where they've seen this going because, as we said, New Hampshire is becoming an older and older state demographically, and you know that's just the way it is.
I think there might be, maybe this is a stereotype, but I think that there is sort of a preference to work at Starbucks as compared to working for a manufacturer among some segment of the millennial generation. I think that the status aspect of a job is important. It feeds into the whole lifestyle preferences of millennials, and maybe some of these manufacturing jobs are just, frankly, not as sexy, even though they pay better.
Well, yeah. Go ahead, Steve.
I think we just have to be careful about what we think about the millennials. They're 27. They're just coming into their own. They're going to figure out what they want in life. I think I certainly wanted something very different at 27 than I want at 35. And they're the next big pocket of population. Yeah. They're going to age. They're going to age into a different perspective as well.
Well, speaking of flexibility and workforce issues and trying to plug the holes among employers, I wanted to talk a little bit with you guys about the so-called gig economy, the freelance economy. Call it what you will. What do you call it, Jeff, and how do you describe it?
Well, yeah, I guess I kind of like the idea of freelance economy, basically. It's also some kind of an example of self-employment, because in many cases, that's what people really want to do. We're talking about millennials. I don't want to paint with a broad brush, but a lot of people prefer to have that kind of flexibility. I know that there are many people younger who have been doing that, working as freelancers, working, you know, maybe a couple, you know, maybe as a contractor, let's say you could be an editor and work, you know, for publishing companies or magazines, or to do proofreading and things like that. Obviously, the big one is Uber, which gives you a lot of flexibility. There's been this move to that, which also has, I think, translated into employers that can't find people maybe to take these jobs they have, looking for these freelancers.
Yeah,
looking
like
for
Steve was saying.
Looking for
team,
what,
right.
You know, independent contractors. That's what happens in construction. You get which raises a whole other can. It opens a can of worms in terms of construction, in terms of independent contractors, but people who work for themselves and basically sell their services. And this has been growing more because of the so-called gig economy, because it's been made easier through things like Uber and Lyft and other kinds of services like that.
Made easier and maybe also encouraged, though, because if somebody's only freelancing for you, you don't have to deal with their sick days.
Exactly.
You don't have to deal with their, you know, with their health care, with their wanting Christmas off. I mean, so...
Well, this is a trend that's been going on actually around the world. And actually, I interviewed Deborah Osgood, who's from the Knowledge Institute based in Exeter, and she has made this a big cause of hers that basically in the coming years, individuals are going to have to just learn how to become their own businesses, like because that's going to be the trend is towards the so-called self-employment.
Nationally, it's around 4%, the last measure. They're called non-contingent jobs. They're holding contingent jobs.
Wait, 4%? That's it?
It's about 4%.
Wow, right. I thought it was a lot more than that.
Right, and this is the question about definition. So independent consultants are 7% of the labor of the job. So, I mean, of the people. So are independent consultants, are they gig workers? Or is this just a new name for that? Or is it contingent workers? You know, but it is less than 10% of the individuals.
The thing that I think is different, not so much the number or percentage, but what's happened is you have things like Airbnb that let you rent out a room. And just as we have Match.com for relationships, we're getting things like Airbnb to connect providers with contractors, in effect. Work Not Work is a site that lets you get somebody part-time. I went on it last night as an example and said, I need my condo cleaned tomorrow. And there was some guy named Mitch that said, I'll do it. It's $75 an hour. I'll come to your place tomorrow, Russ. So, and connecting online. So I think that the availability of these connecting, these Match.com for jobs, Airbnb is one example, makes it easier to maximize your benefits. And then on the employer side, very task-oriented. For example, I needed a business card designed. I can't hire a business card designer for my firm, but I could go out and find a contractor to do it.
Sure, and that's always been the case for something like a business card, right? You go to, you know, someone who does that. But I wonder how significant this gig economy is here in New Hampshire versus other states. You know, given our rural and suburban nature, some of these require a density, a population density. Steve, I'll turn to you. You know, for example, Uber isn't that big from what I hear in New Hampshire because it's just it's not worth it for them to drive from, you know, north to south.
Right. Well, to Russ's point, you know, there's something called TaskRabbit, which is, you know, you go out on this like Craigslist for getting something done and accomplished. And what if that person is 4 hours away?
Yeah.
You know, so to some extent, the density of particular skill sets is the question more so than people. Boston, I'll bet you can get almost anything done.
Well, and again, given our older demographics, Steve, you know, how might that play into the gig economy? Our older workers who might be perfectly capable of doing some of these jobs connected to that gig economy.
Well, that's actually a fascinating observation. That may be exactly right for this population, the 65 to 75 year old population, that have skill sets in marketing, that have skill sets in writing, editing. So maybe we should talk to AARP about creating a TaskRabbit application for the aging economy here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, because I'm just wondering, because I hear so much about it in other places like San Francisco or New York or Boston, but I don't hear that much about it in New Hampshire. And I wonder the rural nature, older demographic, you know, so I just wonder what parts of this gig economy are tailor-made for New Hampshire,
right?
You know, and what parts don't fit as well. Jeff, do you want to jump in?
Well, actually, I know because I've even asked Uber about this. You know, where Uber would be really helpful is in rural areas in New Hampshire where there is no public transportation, but there's no critical mass, so they can't come there. So, it for that kind of service, it's not going to work. But as Steve said, you know, if it's something to do with brain power, you could, you know. I know of, you know, of people who outsource their jobs for certain software out, and they go to India to do this, get the stuff done or whatever, and that's it's an international. There's no limits on that bounds when it involves just your creativity and your ability to get something done on time. But if it's more of something where you need to clean someone's condo, it's got to be, you know, basically around the corner, because, well, nearby, because it's not going to be worth anyone's while to have someone traveling 4 hours to do that.
I just read something about the digital gig economy, what you're talking about, yes. And more and more being farmed out to, you know, really smart people in Nigeria, Malaysia, the Philippines, yes. Where they're educated, they have good language skills, so that might pull away some gig work from, yes. You know, an older skilled worker here in New Hampshire.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing is that you have to be concerned about companies like Uber, which keeps on apparently underpaying their drivers and stuff. But that's Uber's another whole discussion.
All right. Well, we didn't even get to energy and its impact on our economy. We're going to cover that today. So we'll cover that next time. I really want to thank all of you very much for being here. Steve, it's good to see you. Thank you,
as well.
So much.
Thanks so much.
Russ Tebow, thanks a lot.
Thanks, Laura.
And Jeff, we'll talk again. Yeah. Thank you.
Great being here.
This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. Hey, if you like what you heard, spread the word. Please give us a review on iTunes to help other listeners find us. And thanks.